Welcome to another edition of ECAC Hockey Decision Makers. It's my pleasure and thrill to be joined by Mike Keenan, the legendary Mike Keenan of the class of 1972 from Nice, St. Lawrence University. Michael, nice to visit with you.
Thanks for having me, Pierre. Great to be here. I've got my Appleton Army t-shirt on, which I got out of the closet from about 50 years ago. But yeah, we're talking ECAC and St. Lawrence in particular.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about Mike Keenan and the great career that Mike Keenan had over the course of time. But Mike, I got to ask you, you played for George Menard and you played for Bernie McKinnon at St. Lawrence University. The number one thing I ask anybody related to St. Lawrence, what was it like to walk into Appleton Arena your first time?
Well, it was a thrill because the history involved in that program, 100 years old now, and the great players that had gone through previously, the fact that we were playing the Ivy League schools was impressive. The banners up in the rafters of all the schools. So it was a real thrill for us to be a part of that program.
Walker Arena was over at Clarkson. Clarkson St. Lawrence is a legendary rivalry. How popular was Mike Keenan back in the day as a player when you moved over to Clarkson?
Well, we had a lot of fun with Clarkson, and it was interesting that we developed a rival that still exists today. The North Country two schools were the other schools come and visit and play back to back against St. Lawrence and Clarkson, and our rivalry was it was so intense, but it was fun because it packed both arenas. Our arenas back then were jam-packed. Every student would trek across the snow-covered campuses to get to the arenas, and we just had a great deal of fun. And by the way, I scored an overtime goal against Clarkson in a big tournament in St. Lawrence.
That's so good. Hey, Mike, I talked about George Menard. I talked about Bernie McKinnon. Everybody knows you as Mike Keenan, the legendary coach. How much did you take from those two gentlemen in particular when you started to go in and pursue a coaching career?
Actually, Pierre, I was in a program to start with, was pre-meds, and then I moved to a Bachelor of Science. But again, coming out of junior hockey and then going to St. Lawrence, you look forward to the coaching and George was a real strict disciplinarian, which I didn't mind. Some of my teammates didn't like it too much. And Bernie was a real player's coach. So the combination of the two styles were completely opposite, but effective. Bernie, of course, went on to coach the women's program for a while. And George, who was an All-American in three sports, demanded a lot of excellence that I think it was a generational change. And for that reason, some of my teammates, as I said, I didn't mind it. I liked the discipline, as you know, but some of them didn't deal with it quite that well.
Mike, you moved on from there to play one season at the University of Toronto. I got to think that's where you probably got really stimulated in terms of wanting to really be a coach at a high level.
Well, we won the national championship there under Tom Watt, and Tom was ahead of the curve in terms of coaching development. He had gone to many parts of the world to study and to learn from different systems throughout the world that were new, and he employed them with us at the University of Toronto. And we developed a real strong relationship, Tom and I, about coaching. I was still playing senior A hockey after I played minor pro, then senior A hockey, and then started coaching high school and then junior hockey in Oshawa. And I relied a great deal on Tom's input in terms of my own coaching development. So that relationship was really important in terms of my development as a coach.
My first pro job was with the Pittsburgh Penguins. I left St. Lawrence University. I was hired by Scotty Bowman. Your first pro job was with the Rochester Americans, Calder Cup champions in 1983. And your boss was Scotty Bowman. Yes. I don't know what your experience was like, but I can tell you mine was unbelievable.
Well, Scotty was, again, very unique individual, but he demanded a lot. from his staff. He had a great staff in Buffalo with Roger Nielsen, Jimmy Roberts, Red Berenson, and others. Joe Crozier was there for a while. But he would come down to Rochester and watch our games and then drive the 70 miles back to Buffalo after a game. He'd get on the phone and be grilling me about every line change I made. And then he would often call in the middle of the night, which I didn't mind. And I think he enjoyed our conversations because our banter or back and forth. He was testing me, but I was up to the test. And I think he enjoyed that, that I would give him feedback that probably others wouldn't have. So it was a great relationship. And of course, I developed my own bench management style, which I think was probably one of his strongest suits as well. And I think that is probably what I took from Scotty Bowman about my coach or involving my coaching career is about the bench management. I think that was one of my best strengths.
He loved those conversations. I was his roommate for 2 years, so I know how much he enjoyed those conversations.
Yeah.
Mike, I got to ask you though, you go from Rochester to Philadelphia and you hit it out of the park. I mean, you really hit out of the park. You took those two Philadelphia teams in 85 and 87 to the Stanley Cup final. You obviously lose to Edmonton. What was it, Mike, when you got to Philadelphia, you said, I got a chance to win with this team?
Well, we were the youngest team in pro sport, not just hockey. And we had a great group of enthusiastic youngsters and some veterans that were important in terms of the development. The Markel, legendary Markel, Gordy's son, was very, very important and impactful. Only Hall of Famer on the team. And Brad McCrimmon, God bless him, was his defense partner. And he was very instrumental in taking charge in the room itself. Dave Poulin, our captain. Our forwards, the oldest forwards, were Poulin, Prop, and Kerr at 26 years of age. And then we went down to youngsters like Zezel and Smith that were still 18, junior eligible. Tockett youngsters, the Sutter brothers, the twins. So it was a really receptive group, a young, eager type of situation that blended well. Great goal, Hall of Fame goaltending and Pelly Lindbergh wins the Vezina. So I think it just all came together, and a very young, enthusiastic coach and a good coaching staff with E.J. McGuire, God bless him, and Ted Sater, and we're really on the cutting edge, thanks to Bobby Clark, our manager, and owner Ed Snyder, who promoted, I think we're one of the first really large coaching groups. Pat Croce was there, strength and conditioning. Billy Barber was there as the skills coach. Bernie Prant, God bless him, was there as the goalie coach. So it was Mike Finocchiaro, video coach. So we had a lot in place in 1984, way ahead of the rest of the league. Cal Botterill was a mental skills coach. So we had all the bases covered, and very eager and receptive team of players to work with.
Mike, you didn't win the Cups there, but in 87, you did win something that was unbelievable with Team Canada. You won the Canada Cup in what's considered to be one of the marquee series of all time. You have to walk into the dressing room before game three. It's a 2 out of 3. And you're looking at players like Lemieux and Gretzky and Bork and all these unbelievable players. What'd you say to them, Mike, before the game, game three?
Well, they were young players, Gretzky and Mess. Raymond might have been, Bork might have been 26. Mario, I think, was 20, 21. But, you know, guys like Paul Cott, we can name all the Hall of Famers that played in that team. And they were motivated, very proud group. They know that they had their hands full with the Soviet Union, the last time Canada played the Soviet Union. And as it turned out, you know, the 6-5, 6-5, 6-5 victory, losing one game as well. So it was it was, and I was young, it was very, very powerful in terms of how they came together and believed and trusted each other. But here's probably the most important thing. They were willing to accept any role. I still remember Doug Gilmore saying, "Mike, I don't care if I play 5 minutes. I don't care what position I play. I just want to be on the team." And Dale Hawerchuk, for example, would be playing in Winnipeg at the top numbers, was now reduced to a checker, Brett Sutter, checker. So they and I could name the whole team, but they went on to accept roles that they hadn't experienced before. And that was a transition for them, those top players. They had so much respect, obviously, for Wayne getting the top minutes and Mark getting the top minutes, and on defense, Raymond and Paul, and probably Larry Murphy getting the top minutes. So it was a group that had some winning experience with the nucleus from the Oilers, winning the Cups. And the respect level, I guess I would describe it as that, was it was incredible. Incredible for the caliber of players that we had in the locker room, and the acceptance of their roles was very, very important.
You know what's incredible, Mike, is every time you and I get a chance to go back to St. Lawrence or we visit one another, you always think of your St. Lawrence guys. How did that bond form, Mike? All the achievement you've had in your life and in your career, that bond with St. Lawrence seems so real. Is it really that omnipresent in your life?
Yeah, it really is, because we went there as kids, you know, we were 17, 18 years old, and stayed in contact. And the environment, I think, and I would think that Clarkson would have the same type of feeling, but we weren't in a big city like the Harvard team or BU, BC, and you could go to the Boston Bruins games, or you could go to other sporting events, or go to see the other college games. We were isolated way up in the North Country, up in Canton, New York, in Potsdam, New York. And we really focused on our campus community. And I think that's why St. Lawrence in itself, not just in the hockey program, but the alumni relationships are very, very intense and deep. And I think it's because of that cold winters. But there was a lot of focus also on the campus around the hockey team, which was the only Division I team on campus at the time, men's. And we stayed in touch. We went back to coaching hockey schools, and we had golf tournaments together, and we just remained connected every year for 50 plus years now. Nick and the Nice Guys had something to do with it. The band.
We're going to go. That's a band that you were a part of.
So that was, it was just a lot of factors that brought us all together.
That's, you know, Mike, every time you tell that story, I've never heard it that way, but it says a lot. 50 years, Mike. 50
yeah.
years. I mean, yeah. Jacques Martin was your goalie.
Yeah, he was no good either.
He was no good.
yeah, so it was a real tight group, yes, and still are.
You know, and then from Philadelphia, you move on to Chicago, and you have an unbelievable run. You really do. And you talked about the relationship with the Sutters before, and one of your assistants is Daryl Sutter. You know, yes. E.J. McGuire was there for a little while as well. And eventually you get your team. You're the best team in the National Hockey League. You probably have the best line in the league at 1 year with Goulet and Larmer and Roenick. And in 1992, you take your team back to the Stanley Cup Final. It's your third time in the final in your career. And you lose to the Penguins in 92. How good was your 92 team, Mike?
It was really good. But the problem I kept running into these teams that had these incredible superstars. Edmonton, I think they had 7 or 8 Hall of Famers. And then, of course, Mario and that gang, all the Hall of Famers that were on that team, and Scotty, Coach, and yourself, they collected and brought in the Hall of Famers, had experience of winning. It was difficult. But I was proud of the way we developed that team over time. We played 60 playoff games in 4 years, Pierre. Yeah. Final four, 3 or 4 years, the finals. We won the President's Trophy, won the divisional title, but we ran into a team and that was just a little bit better than us. Hall of Fame goaltending as we had, but with Brasso and Belfour and Hasek, but they just had a little bit more experience and we weren't quite able to get by them. But again, we had great team, great leadership, great players, Hall of Famers now. All you just mentioned Goulet and Roenick and Chelly, of course, and Eddie and a number of players that really we had a very charismatic team. We're one of the most penalized teams in the league. We had a personality, as was the case in Philadelphia. We had a personality. Nobody wanted to come in Chicago and play. Going up those, 13 steps at the old stadium from the visitors' dressing room, the roar, as they used to call it, come out of here, was the organ playing before the games, the energy, the size of the ice surface was unique. So there was a great entertainment with, I'm really proud of that team and the way that they again are still in touch, and I hear from a lot of those players to this date. So it was a really fun team.
Yeah, there's no question. One of the things I remember the most before game three in the 92 final, standing on the bench and the national anthem, and you know, because you were on the other bench, the floor was shaking, Mike.
Yeah.
I had never experienced that, Mike, ever. In all the different buildings I'd ever coached in, I had never experienced anything like that.
Yeah, you could feel the vibration and the energy, and the glass behind the bench would vibrate.
Yeah, so no, you're right.
It was what a great place to play hockey for players. I mean, the fun of it, the intensity, the noise, the support, the fans were very passionate about the game. Original six teams, so it was a lot of fun.
Then your journey goes to New York. And yeah, you talked about your time at St. Lawrence and in Canton, being in the North Country. You're not in the North Country anymore. You're in Manhattan. You're on Broadway. You're with the New York Rangers. Can you just take us inside the way they pursued you and how that all came about?
Well, I was dismissed in Chicago. And you mentioned Daryl Sutter. Daryl had become the coach. I was the manager only. And then I was dismissed by Mr. Wirtz, and I became a free agent. I was pursued, fortunately, by a number of clubs, but ended up going to the Rangers. And they were really, assertive in their pursuit, but mainly because of Stanley Jaffe. Stanley was the chairman of the team, and Bob Gutkowski, and then Neil Smith came as well. But Stanley was, interested because of the track record. I coached 56 playoff games in Philly, Cup twice, Chicago mentioned 60 playoff games. So they wanted some experienced coach to go to New York and try to win a Stanley Cup. And of course we had great leadership in the locker room, Mark Messier being in the forefront, but I had a relationship maybe with some of the players before, as we acquired more, yes, but with Mark twice in Canada Cup. So probably I never have asked, and I don't know if he was asked about my coaching skills or when they were pursuing me. I'm not sure, but I ended up in New York.
You sure did. And you won the Stanley Cup in 1994. And what I remember is just watching you. I was coaching Hartford at the time, and we had played you guys a few times during the year, but I watched the relief on your face as McTavish goes in for the big face-off in game 7 against Vancouver. I know what it was like to win two cups. You win the cup. I'd like to know what you were feeling. Mike Keenan, St. Lawrence University, class of 72, standing on Broadway at MSG, winning the cup.
Well, Pierre, when, as you know, I don't know if it ever happened before, but Mark started skating towards me, and I wasn't sure what was going to transpire. I wasn't sure what he was thinking, obviously. He's skating right to me, hands me the cup, which I never thought is, I don't think has happened, had happened before, maybe not since. And when he did, it was like a feather. I lifted it up over my head, and I can tell you exactly what was going through my head. I said, man, this thing is tough to win. So, you know, the roof almost blew off Madison Square Gardens with the response from the crowd. They were so excited. And, you know, I was on the losing end of game seven and the winning end again of game seven for the Stanley Cup. So it was incredible experience, really. A great team that came together. They were, again, that same type of feeling in the locker room. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. I'll accept any role you want me to play. And the guidance in the room itself, the experience in the room itself, was so important, because the pressures and the expectations of winning in New York City and then to win the Stanley Cup in New York City, the response from the fans was unbelievable. Over a million people come to the parade. It was something I don't think the NHL has ever experienced before, and probably hasn't since, when they had that kind of support from the fan base in New York City, downtown, as you said, Manhattan.
How do you explain all the St. Lawrence alumni, whether it was the late Bill Torrey, the late Ray Shero, Randy Sexton, Mike Keenan, Jacques Martin, all these people that have been around Stanley Cup and winning? How do you explain that?
Maybe we just got lucky. We're hockey guys that were interested in the sport, and you know, some of us were coaches, some of us were managers. I can't really tell you why it evolved out of that school, out of St. Lawrence, the number of people that went on to have solid careers in the National Hockey League from a very, very small school. But the love and passion, I guess, that we experienced about the game carried us through and inspired us to be involved in the game and to pursue our dream of being involved in the game at the NHL level.
You know, it's kind of neat. John Tinelli's a player that you know very well. Two of his boys played at Brown. One's still there, the other one graduated. And then Mark Messier's nephew played at Harvard. I mean, did you ever equate that some of your players would be sending their kids or nephews or relatives to Ivy League schools in ECAC?
Well, as you know, that development now is incredible in terms of the players coming out of ECAC hockey or college hockey overall. I mean, top players are using that route. It's a great, great way to explore your hockey potential. I mean, it used to be just more or less junior hockey back in the day, but some of us pursued it through the university and venue. And now it's even more incredible in terms of the number of people being drafted out of that pool of players. And it continues to be impressive, as you know, and will be in the future, as now the rules change, that he's going to evolve into even a bigger ground or breaking ground for the National Hockey League to develop players and for the schools to experience special players playing in the league and the teams getting that much better.
You have any favorite memories of the Hoot Owl, Mike? That's a legendary bar in Canton, New York, by the way.
Yeah, it was. And we, God bless Danny Fay, who opened it in 1970. I think we were the first customers. He loved the hockey players. And it was an ongoing tradition after that all the hockey players, men and women, would all go to the Hoot Owl after games. So, and even this last celebration of 100 years of hockey in St. Lawrence, the players gathered there after the events, celebrating Ray Shiro, and brought back memories that go back 50 years.
Mike, thank you so much for this walk down memory lane. You've been fantastic. I'm so happy to see you doing well. You looked fantastic at St. Lawrence, and I know it meant a lot to your former teammates and to a lot of the fans in Canton that you were there, Mike. It was awesome.
Appreciate it, Pierre. Great to talk to you.
Another great example of – what's that, Mike?
I said it was great to see you at St. Lawrence as well.
Oh, thanks, Mike. Another great example of a great ECAC hockey person going on and doing great things, a legendary Mike Keenan. You've watched another edition of ECAC Hockey Decision Makers. Thank you.
The ECAC Hockey Championship returns to Lake Placid, New York this March. Witness the first ever ECAC Hockey Women's Championship in Lake Placid on March 6th and 7th, and the Men's Championship on March 20th and 21st. It happens at the legendary Herb Brooks Arena, the home of miracles.
You believe in miracles? Yes!
Don't miss the battle for the 2026 title and an NCAA bid. Tickets are on sale now at LakePlacidOlympicCenter.com. ECAC Hockey, the educated decision.